If you're a founder, you know that fundraising is a big part of the job. What you might not know is that Carta is there to help. Carta's new fundraising suite provides startups of all stages the best tools and support to easily issue SAFEs, accurately forecast dilution, and quickly close funding rounds. Save time, money, and make your next round your best yet. To learn more or to get started, go to carta.com/fundraise. That's carta.com/fundraise. Welcome to Inc's The Founders Project with Alexa Von Tobel. I'm Alexa, the founder of LearnVest, author of New York Times bestselling book, Financially Fearless, and second book, Financially Forward. I'm also the founder and managing partner of Inspired Capital, a venture firm focused on the entrepreneurs of the future. Each week, we sit down with a top founder to share their story of guts, inspiration, and drive. Hi, everybody. I'm your host, Alexa Von Tobel. And this week, meet someone who needs absolutely no introduction, Sarah Blakely, the founder and executive chairwoman of Spanx. In 1998, Sarah revolutionized the undergarment industry with just $5,000, turning Spanx into a global brand known for inventing smarter, more comfortable solutions. Sarah was named one of Time Magazine's 100 most influential people in the world and was featured on the cover of Forbes magazine as the youngest self-made female billionaire. She's also the Guinness Book of World Record holder for having the world's highest tea party on top of a hot air balloon. But on Instagram, you may know her as the Pancake Queen, making pancakes in crazy shapes and sizes for her four children. Sarah has invested millions of dollars to elevate women, and in 2013, she signed the Giving Pledge, promising to donate half her wealth to philanthropy. And with that, I want to welcome somebody I've really enjoyed getting to know, Sarah. Hi, Sarah. Welcome. I'm pretty positive we don't have a single listener in this audience who doesn't know about Spanx, but can we just go back to the beginning? And in your own words, the aha moment, the origin story, will you give it to us fresh?
For anybody who might be listening who doesn't know what Spanx is, I really think of Spanx, the brand, as this brand that I wanted to advocate for women through product, right? So I was a frustrated consumer. I saw that the people making our products, and in particular our undergarments at the time, were not the ones wearing them. And there wasn't a lot of attention to how we felt in these and how they functioned, right? So there was a lot of just pumping out stuff that felt very thoughtless. And I was like, I'm going to raise my hand. I don't know this industry, but I'm going to see if I can advocate for women and give us a better option. So the brand Spanx kind of became this like advocating in the fashion space for women through product. And then the first product, of course, was just the very first Spanx was I believed that you could make an undergarment out of hosiery material. And at the time, hosiery was only meant to be seen on the leg. And all the men were like, we don't get it. And I was like, look, it's second to skin. It's breathable. It's lightweight. It's going to give all women a canvas under their clothes that's much overdue because I can't figure out as a consumer what to wear under my white pants. They hung in my closet and all my friends who were models, I'd call them and go, what were you wearing in that ad? And they're like, oh, we were airbrushed. And I'm like, okay, but like we buy these pants. I bought pants from Arden B in the mall and brought them home and they hung in my closet for like 8 months trying to figure out what to wear under them. So the very first products were the undergarments made out of hosiery material that stayed comfortably in place under your clothes. My aha moment, oh my gosh. I mean, I sold fax machines for 7 years, Alexa, door to door.
Wow.
And I was constantly being kicked out of office buildings and escorted out. People would rip my business card up in my face all the time. And on one particular day, I'd had such a tough day. I pulled off the side of the road. I was crying and I thought, I'm in the wrong movie. Cut, call the producer, call the director. This is not my life. I went home, I wrote down in my journal what I was good at. And the only thing in my good column was sales. And I asked myself, why am I good at sales? What do I like about that? And I knew that I liked giving something to someone that they didn't know they needed or that helped improve their life. And so once I identified that, I wrote, I will invent a product that I can sell to millions of people that will make them feel good.
Wow.
And I looked up at the ceiling in my apartment and I said, universe, give me the idea and I will not squander it. And 2 years later, because the universe has its own timeline, I cut the feet out of control top pantyhose to wear under my white pants to a party. And I thought this might be the idea I asked the universe for. And so I started at that moment trying to make that for women.
Can you just talk about those early days of like
you starting to think about how to get it out there? What was the creative board? How did you think? Because you really got doors open. And I think people sometimes think doors just magically open. You have to will them open.
So how I was thinking to answer that question was, okay, I got to get this product made. How am I going to get this product made, right? And I ended up driving around North Carolina. I took my 1 week of vacation time, drove around North Carolina, and went in person to all the manufacturers that I had found on the internet, which was just kind of starting. I went on the internet and looked them up and, you know, started going in person to try to get them to make the product. And so that was one bucket, was like, just get this thing made, figure this out, find the right person that can help you make this. And then another bucket was protect it. So I went to Barnes & Noble, bought a book on patents and trademarks, and wrote my own patent, and except for the claims portion, and then begged a lawyer to do that part, because that was the more really technical legal part for not a lot of money. Did it for $700 or $800. And then the other bucket in my head was like, I've got to get people to know about this. And like, where is this going to be sold? I'd never taken a business class in my life. I had no advisors. I hadn't ever worked in fashion or retail. But I kind of intuitively was like, all right, if I start at Neiman's, you know, the big guys are probably going to knock me off pretty quickly. And they may or may not be able to get this knockoff right. But if I'm in a place where the consumer can spend money for brand, then I'm not competing over the last dollar in mass market where I might just be blown out of the water. So that was part of my thinking. Anyway, I cold called Neiman Marcus. And the funny story about that, Alexa, is this is where I say what you don't know can be your greatest asset if you let it. Like, a lot of people wait for the right time, right? Like, I'm not smart enough yet. I don't know enough about the industry I'm about to disrupt, or I have this idea in, or, you know, and if you wait for the right time, it never comes.
Amen.
Here's your news.
Amen.
It never comes. So you have to jump. Like Reid Hoffman said, entrepreneurship is jumping off the cliff and assembling the plane on the way down.
Yep.
And that is truly how it feels. You're like, oh my God, like I might hit the ground, but you have to be willing to do that. And I landed Neiman Marcus, and all these people in the industry, Alexa, were like, how did you get into Neiman Marcus? And I was like, I called them. Alexa, they would go, what? I'm like, why? What do you do? And they're like, well, there's trade shows and we set up a booth. And everyone says after about 4 years of being at the trade show, the Neiman's buyer might come to your booth. I didn't even know there were trade shows. I looked Neiman's up in the yellow pages and called them. And so I told the buyer, if you give me 10 minutes of your time, I'm Sarah Blakely. I invented a product that's going to change the way your customers wear clothes. Going to help your salespeople sell a lot more clothing, and it's going to disrupt a category. And so if you give me 10 minutes of your time, I'll fly to Dallas and show you. And I went there. I'm always, and when I'm pitching anyone or talking to anyone, very focused on what's in it for them. That's kind of all my mind is thinking about when I'm talking to somebody. What's in it for them? What's in it for them? And what's my why? You know, like, why? People are so much more invested in the why you're doing something than the what. And so anyway, I got my 10 minutes with her, Alexa. I flew to Dallas. I'm sitting there. She's impeccably dressed. Like, the Neiman Marcus headquarters is pretty intimidating. I've got my lucky red backpack from college with a prototype in a Ziploc bag, and I color copied my packaging that my friend and I made on her computer. She had just finished art school. And so I had a Kinko's copy of it, and I glued it to the front of another person's hosiery package. And that was my presentation. But anyway, from selling fax machines for 7 years, I'm really in tune to nonverbals. And I think nonverbals are so important, and the whole emotional EQ side of life. And within 5 minutes of pitching her, I could tell I was losing her, you know? And so I had nothing to lose. I said, you know what, Diane, come with me to the bathroom. And this impeccably dressed woman was like, excuse me. I said, you just have to come with me to the bathroom. I'm going to show you what this product can do. I went in the stall, put it on in my white pants, showed her with and without. And she just kind of stood there and went, I get it. It's brilliant. And I'm going to put it in 7 stores as a trial.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sarah, I didn't know that data point, that mid-meeting, you had to be like, all right, I don't have you.
No.
Follow me.
A lot of times, Alexa, what happened? I learned this from selling fax machines. Someone will be going like this. I love your product. I think it's great. But they're shaking their head no while they're saying
no.
And I'm like, And then I would just literally stop them and go, you're telling me yes, but you're shaking your head no. Let's talk about that, you know? And the people would be like, well, wait. I'm like, no, really, I think you're really telling me no. And I want to understand why, because let's talk about it. So selling fax machines door to door is super humbling, and it really helps you figure out how to communicate with someone and really understand what they're feeling in that moment and be honest about it.
I think it's a really beautiful insight, Sarah, which is every single major sales conversation is, why do they care? Why do they care? Why do they care?
The whole time. Why does this mean anything to them? Right? Like, why? And I think people get so like, this is my product and I'm going to just spew out my product and I've got my, you know, this is what it is and blah, 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 blah. And they miss the whole, like, what's important to you? How can I help you? Let's do this.
So you got on Oprah's Favorite Things, which, let's just be clear, was, I mean, I remember that.
Yeah, well, let me just tell you what happened with Neiman's, because it was really funny. I called the factory owner, Sam, and I'm like, Sam, it's Sarah. I need more Spanx. He said, all right, well, I'm going to patch you through to Ted. Ted's going to help you get them. And Ted said to me, well, what you going to do about the crotches? This is exactly what happened to me. I'm like, what do you mean the crotches, Ted? Don't they come with crotches? We've been making them with crotches. He's like, well, yeah, but I only got two crotch machines and they're being used by somebody else. I literally looked up crotch and it's not in the yellow pages under crotch. It's called gusset. So then I was like, I need a gusset. And I had crotches being FedExed from all around the world to my apartment. And I ended up finding a factory a little bit north of where I live in Atlanta that makes crotches. And I send them to the 7 stores. I sent them to Oprah's show. I got lucky. Her stylist put them on her and she fell in love with them, and Spanx became her favorite thing.
Tell us a little bit about that machine, how you thought about finding customers, because not advertising for 16 years is a brilliant thing. And that really speaks to the product.
I literally just thought, where can I share the word about Spanx? So there was two things that went through my mind. I can't afford a sales force. I need salespeople. And I can't afford to advertise. Where are free places that will talk about this? And I made a list, and it was radio stations, TV stations, QVC, and, you know, the morning shows like CBS, ABC, all of that. I just went from there. I started checking things off. I wrote press releases. I sent them to every news outlet in the country. I knew that my story had two angles: the girl with the red backpack that believed in herself and invented something, and then also what the product was and how disruptive it was. Those were my two assets that I knew I had that the big guys didn't have. I was really intentional about the point of difference of what this product was. And I named it something funny, like Spanx made people laugh. Before Spanx, whoever lifted up their dress and said, I'm wearing, you know, whatever XYZ, no one talked about that. But because I named it Spanx and because I made the packaging feel like a present to yourself, I put cartoon women on it. I made it red in a sea of beige and white and gray. It took on a life of its own. So radio DJs across the country wanted to laugh and talk about it. All the TV shows put me on there. And for 2 years, I went and sold the product for all the accounts that were giving me a chance. And I would do a morning rally before the store opened, and I would recruit the entire store, sell all day for them, and then leave. But what I was doing, and I didn't even fully realize it at the time, was I was creating a very devoted sales force for me that were championing my product and believing in me.
Wow. Talk a little bit about your decision-making on when to spend more money. How did you think about that as a CEO?
I think founders who take in outside money, there are two things that I've really observed. People are making decisions to bring in outside money because they want to get successful faster. And if you make that decision, you really have to weigh in what you're giving up to do that. The second way that I think founders take in outside money is you absolutely have to grow. And so just pay attention to why you're doing it. Which bucket are you falling in? If you have to do it to grow and you have very clear strategic reasons why you need this money, then it makes perfect sense and be prudent about it. But I would say, Alexa, you live in this world more than I even do, witnessing it. There's so much of people just wanting to grow as fast as humanly possible. And growth for the sake of growth was not ever anything that I aimed for. I was like, I want to make the best products for women. And I never got to a place where I felt I needed outside money for growth. I mean, I just used the $5,000 and then whatever I sold, I took the profit from that and I bought my next batch. And
so on and so on. So, and Spanx has been profitable from its first month in business, and it's been very, very profitable the whole 23 years.
I want to fast forward to 2021 when you announced that Blackstone was buying a majority stake in Spanx.
Yeah.
What went through your head that day? Like, can you walk us through the emotional side of that for you? And what did that feel like?
It felt like every emotion in one day. And for the first year after the sale, it felt like a lot of grief. And it was the right decision for me, but I felt profound grief. So why I did it was my intuition. Like, I've been operating off of intuition, Alexa, the whole time. And funny enough, when I started, everyone was asking me what my exit strategy was. I didn't even know what an exit strategy was. I finally told all these guys that kept asking me that. I go, I want to exit a room and look good. That's my exit strategy. Like, and then maybe after a decade and maybe 12 years, I was like, how does this work? You know, if it becomes clear that Spanx needs to go to another chapter with maybe not me at the whole helm, and what would that possibly mean if I get to that place for myself? So I just kept saying to everyone, I'll know and it'll be intuitive. And Spanx got to be 22 years old. So if you think of it as a mother, I mean, I really do think of Spanx as my child. I birthed it, I grew it, I protected it, you know, as mothers were like, whoa. And then you kind of feel this like calling to set it more free and also for yourself. And I think for me, it was a very personal decision of feeling like this has occupied the majority of my mental share for 22 years of my life. I like to tell people, for other founders, it came with tremendous grief. It's a letting go. It's like a death in some way of a part of yourself. It felt like the death of a child in some ways, which is profoundly hard to process. But that also, without death, there isn't rebirth. I'm still involved in Spanx. I'm over all the big branding decisions. I'm always involved in product. I love to invent. Like, I feel really good now. It was a process I had to go through. I adore Spanx. It's like my firstborn and always will be. It's like I kind of moved to grandmother status in a way. Now I'm like, call me if you guys need me. I'm here for you.
And we'll be right back after a message from our sponsors. Alexa here. Not only do I get the opportunity to speak with all types of founders on For Starters, but I'm a repeat founder myself. We all know how vital fundraising is to a startup. Carta knows this too. That's why they had founders in mind when they created their fundraising suite, providing tools and support to take the friction out of fundraising. They save founders time and money, allowing you to focus on your goals, not the admin work needed to close a round. From simply issuing safes to quickly receiving funds, Carta Fundraising Suite helps their cap table customers raise a better fundraising round. To learn more or to get started, go to carta.com/fundraise. That's carta.com/fundraise.
Sarah, I want to transition a little bit to you. You grew up in Florida. Is there something you look back on? And I know you are a mother of many children, let's say, are repeating with them because it left such a great, strong impact on you.
I think probably one of the things that most formed my drive and kind of who I became was seeing that my mom, being a stay-at-home mom, was really beholden to my father financially. And to see my mom on an allowance and as a little girl be like, I have an allowance. Like, why does my mother have an allowance as a grown woman? And her asking my dad for money and trying to kind of beg for a little bit more money for the iron that came out at Sears. And I just remember making a note as a little girl, like, I'm not going to be in this position. And so I think that that really informed a lot more than I could realize. And then my parents got divorced when I was a freshman in high school. And I just remember feeling what that felt like. And I was like, Mom, don't worry. You know, you have savings and this is good. And she was like, honey, I don't have savings. Like, there's no savings when you're a stay-at-home mom. And I don't have 401k and I don't have pension. And I was like, whoa. You know, I come from a family that's very loving, but I think that was very informative for me. For as long as I can remember, I've wanted to support and elevate women. And I've really wanted the respect of my dad more than I even wanted the love from him. And I felt that generation, I feel like my dad was a kind of more of like, I adore women and I adore your mother, but I don't really respect her. And so that was something that I felt like as a little girl, it felt off. It was like, I'm an equal. Like this, we're totally equal here. Why am I looking around and seeing and feeling this? And I didn't have a role model. Like every single one of my mother's friends were stay-at-home mothers. I had never even met a businesswoman growing up. Like I'd never met a female founder. I didn't even know they existed. Everything we talked about in school was like all the men that had changed the world in business. So it hadn't even really occurred to me that that could be an option.
Tell us a little bit about that intuition piece. Can you coach us on how you know to listen to your intuition, what that looks and feels like, just so we have a guide path?
I feel like the way that I have been able to be most connected to my intuition, and this would be my advice to everyone, is you have got to spend time alone. You have got to connect with yourself. Where do you daydream, Alexa? That's what I would ask everyone listening.
Wow.
I'm not talking about where do you go through your checklist. Like some people will be like, oh, I run and then I'm going through everything I got to do that week. I'm like, no. That's not when you're connecting to intuition. Intuition is this channel that you have that really can come in clear. It's like the old fashioned radio station where it's like fuzzy. You're like turning the knob fuzzy. And then all of a sudden the song comes through crystal clear. That crystal clear connection can only really happen when you're daydreaming. And so I identified that my place where my mind wanders is the car. I have to have the music playing and I'm just driving. And I realized, Alexa, that for me, daydreaming happens there because I'm doing a rote activity. So I always tell people, like, look at your calendar over the next 2 weeks and tell me, where do you have allocation of time to daydream? Like, where does that happen? And it doesn't, because we're so programmed. We've got meeting, decisions, then I've got the kids. And so because I identified it's in the car, Alexa, I live 5 minutes from Spanx, but all my friends will tell you, I get up an hour before I have to go to work and drive aimlessly around Atlanta because I've allocated the time where I know that this daydreaming and this intuition connection happens. And everyone has called it my fake commute. They're like, are you on your fake commute again? I'm like, yep.
You made Spanx into sweatpants and sweatshirts that I can't take off. So everybody out there, if you haven't checked out all of the products, it is mind-blowing. Talk a little bit about that inventor part and what does it even mean to you?
My favorite compliment that I can get is, Sarah, you just created something I didn't know I needed and now I can't live without it. Like I love white space. I love looking at things and going, how could that be better? My brain just looks at everything all day like that. And I love being able to find, I call it white space, which is opportunity to see something that can be improved. You know, I think that being an inventor, you really have to be willing to fail. You have to be willing to be made fun of. You have to have a confidence in yourself that is really more rare in women than in men. And I think a lot of that has to do with society. And just, I think it's becoming less that way, thankfully. But certainly when I invented Spanx and I have several patents, I think there was only like 6% of patent holders were females.
Wow.
The primary patent holder was a female. I mean, it's so low, but I really, really love disruption in the sense that, you know, creating something out of nothing. I think that is so much fun.
Sarah, last big question. How did you manage the stress of it? Give us like any pro tip that you learned through the journey of how to manage through those highs and lows.
One of the biggest things I did that really reduced my stress was I started bucketing my days. As an entrepreneur, we do everything. And so there's not a predictable day usually, you know? And I just got so exhausted and really burned out. And at the end of each day, I didn't feel super successful. And so all of a sudden I was like, time out. Monday is my day that I'm going to have meetings. And that's like touch bases with people that I need to know. Tuesday is product day. I'm really primarily going to be making product decisions, thinking about product. Wednesday will be brand day. And once I kind of took the 3 or 4 main buckets that were my superpower or strength that I could offer Spanx. And that's another thing as an entrepreneur, you really have to delegate and know what you're good at. And at the end of each day, ask yourself, did I spend the majority of my day doing what I'm best at? And if I didn't, why? And I need to delegate more. I need to hire the right people. But bucketing my days reduced my stress exponentially because it also gave me an opportunity to make decisions with more context.
Sarah, I'm going to move to the quick fire round.
Okay.
And I'm just going to ask you a question. First thing that comes to your mind.
Okay.
A favorite interview question you like to ask people to get to know them.
I mean, nobody loves it, but I always ask people, what are your 3 weaknesses? And I just say, we're all a work in progress. What are your three weaknesses? And I learned so much from that question. Usually on the third one, I learn the most. But it also just shows how self-aware somebody is if they're able to kind of rattle that off.
Can you tell us your biggest pinch me moment to date?
I mean, for me, it's anytime I created a new product that women loved. When I came out with the power panties, after I had invented my first product, I was like, am I a one-hit wonder? I don't know. And then I thought of the power panty, which was the first ever shaper short that stopped on the thigh, but didn't have a leg band and didn't leave a line or a bulge through women's clothes. And just was very smooth on the thigh, but didn't ride up. And I had a patent on that. And when that took off, I still remember it like it happened yesterday. But I would say all my pinch me moments are around product and delivering something and seeing the delight and the excitement and the emotion in the consumer.
Tell us a book. It can be any book that had like a material impact on your life.
From a business standpoint, I really liked the book Body and Soul by Anita Roddick. She's the founder of The Body Shop. I also really liked Richard Branson's book, Losing My Virginity. I read that in college.
Is there a quote or a motto you live by? And Sarah, I know you have amazing quotes. And guys, if you haven't seen Sarah's Instagram, it's just filled with these mugs and these like really fun moments that like just bring a little bit of joy to my day, at least on a regular basis. But you got to pick one quote. What would it be?
Well, I do have a life motto since you asked, and it is, the more you experience in life, the more you have to offer others. This is just the way I've lived my life. The good, the bad, the ups, the down, like just be hungry for new experiences because then you have so much more to offer others. That kind of compass keeps me in a place of yes, you know, and wanting to be like, let's just do it. Let's jump in, even for the experience, not so much for even the outcome. A lot of people live their life very focused on the outcome. But if you shift it to like, I'm in it for the experience, then I think you'll take more risks. But I'll tell you a funny story about that real quick. I had this life motto for a while, and I was at a cocktail party, and it was right after I had my first child and my memories, you know, and all of a sudden I go like this, my husband's standing next to me and all these important people around me. Like, I think I was even at Bill Gates' house for a cocktail party. Like, I think it was this kind of level. And I was like, well, I have a motto I live by. And, you know, and someone that we were all talking to goes, well, what is it? I forgot my motto, Alexa. I was like, and Jesse's looking at me like, I was like, I forgot it. I don't know it right now. So then everyone kind of laughed, but I literally forgot my life motto in that moment. I don't know if I was just nervous. Jesse, I go away for 2 days, and Jesse thought it was funny to get a neon sign made and installed on the wall of our living room with my life motto. And it's just a neon sign that says, I have a motto that I live by, but I forgot it.
What are you daydreaming about right now?
I'm daydreaming about how to clean the ocean. I'm daydreaming about another product that I'm creating right now for women that's going to make her feel so much better. And I'm so excited to launch this coming soon. My mind will go everywhere. I'll daydream about like, why do I have allergies during the day, but when I sleep, I'm not sneezing? What's happening to my brain when I'm in sleep mode that doesn't make me allergic to the same things I was allergic to during the day? And like, how can you access that? So like, I'll just literally, it's the gamut. And then like, I created the belly art book and painted all these women's pregnant bellies, crazy objects, watermelon, beach ball, basketball, and like made a book about that. So it's just all over the place.
Sarah, I just want to pause and say thank you so much for joining us today. For women out there everywhere that you've been elevating, we are so honored to have you here today and rooting for you in every way. Guys, if you want to learn more about Spanx, you got to head to spanx.com, and you can join us next week for Ink the Founders Project with Alexa von Tobel. Sarah, we can't wait to see what you're up to. All of our best. Thank you.